Well, thank you, Michael, for those songs that fit the theme of our lesson this morning, and Bob for him thinking and pondering thoughts and sharing those thoughts with us to help us with the Lord's Supper and getting in the right frame of mind, and so that we are generous people. So the Bible and the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 6, among the things that Jesus said on that occasion, he said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." And I'm just impressed that Jesus used both terms. It's not just, "Blessed are those who thirst after righteousness," or just, "Blessed are those who hunger after righteousness." That he used both of those, and I think that's significant of that. It's something that we should pursue with our entire being. It's something that we yearn for this. People talk about your passion. We're passionate about this. It's something that you throw yourself into with all your heart. It's like this consuming quest. It's always at the forefront of your mind. It's never far away from your thoughts. It's almost like your first waking thought and the last thought you have before you go to bed, but it's just one of those things that you're always pondering and you're always thinking about, and it's never far from your consciousness. And again, hunger, a number of writers say hunger here is, it's not nibble hunger. It's not, "Well, I'm kind of hungry." It's you're famished. You're starving. I remember one time last year, it was a little bit after this time last year, I was putting a new fence with a neighbor, and I was pulling posts out of the ground, and they were down deep and they were rooted in concrete, and I was just spending a day doing that. Me and Cindy ate about that night at like 9 o'clock, and I told her I could sit here at this table in this restaurant and eat for the next 12 hours. I'm so hungry. They could just keep bringing food, and that's how famished I am. And so it's a passionate hunger. It's not a snack. I don't know about you, but there are just certain meals, like, you almost want to tell people at the table, "I'm not going to talk for a while. You can talk, but I'm not going to talk. And all you're going to hear is clickety-clack of my fork and my knife. You can talk, but I may hear you, but I'm eating right now." And I think that's what this is. This is just this passionate sort of hunger. It's easy to date God. And I think you can fall into the, and I think over time as a Christian, we've done some of that. We've dated God, but we're not married to God. You need to be married to God, but it's very easy to treat your relationship with God like you were dating God. And what I mean by that is that he's kind of convenient to have around. He's someone to do something on the first day of the week with. And if you're in trouble, it's nice for him to be there. It's like a date. It's nice to be dating that guy. If I need a couch moved or whatever, he's kind of handy. Something to do on the weekend. Someone, I have a date for a Valentine's Day or New Year's Eve. But it's easy to date God. Because when you're dating God, it's like, well, this is good for now, but who knows, something better might come my way. And I mean, I'm not really fully committed to him. I'm kind of him, and I'm not going to marry him. I'm not going to give him all my life. And I'm going to keep kind of my finances. I mean, a lot of times when people date, they keep their finances separate. He has his money, and she has her money, and you pay your half of the rent, and I pay my half of the rent. Like if you're roommates or if you're living together, which you shouldn't do, but people do that. And when you're dating God, you're more like roommates. God's kind of a roommate. And you hide money from him. And you live separate lives, except on the first day of the week you kind of come together. And it's this relationship we have with God as well. I'll pay my 50% of the bills and my 50% of the rent. And that's not a marriage, is it? Because marriage isn't 50%. Marriage is 100%. You're 100% in. And I think it's easy to date God. Where, well, I'm dating God, but I want to marry him. And I guess my question right now this morning is, your relationship with God, like you're dating him, but you're not married to him. You know, I'm kind of in. I'm 50% in, but I'm not 100% in on this. It's interesting. Jesus said, "She'll be satisfied." But I think, like a lot of promises in the Bible, that's a conditional promise of, "Shall be satisfied" does not work when you nibble after God. "Shall be satisfied" only shows up if you hunger and thirst after God. So I think what he's warning you is that if you develop a relationship with God that is kind of like a now and then thing and a hot and cold thing, and you're about 50 or 60 for 5% in on it, you're not going to be satisfied. Doesn't work that way. This is something that you're only going to be satisfied if you hunger and thirst after righteousness. And if you say, like, "Well, I'm not willing to do that. Can I do something less?" And God says, "Well, then all bets are off. You're not going to be satisfied." That is, you're not going to enjoy the relationship if you're just like partway in. It's only going to end up in a disappointment at the end of the day. Now, you might be satisfied for a while, because the Laodiceans were lukewarm. They weren't hot, they weren't cold, they were not all the way in, and it looks like they were satisfied. So because you're lukewarm, Revelation 3:16, and neither hot nor cold, "I will spit you out of my mouth. Because you say, 'I am rich, and I become wealthy, and I have need of nothing,' and you do not know what you are, wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked." So it looks like the Laodiceans were happy with the relationship with God that they currently had. Kind of a lukewarm relationship, that they were content with that. But what I found in life, that typically that contentment does not last, is that it wears thin. It doesn't last you over your lifetime. It does catch up to you, kind of the spiritual lukewarmness, half-heartedness, whatever you want to call it. Even in this life, I think it catches up to you, because life hits you with things that if you're lukewarm, you're not ready for it. And if you're lukewarm, you don't have the reserve and the foundation and the resources you need. And if you're lukewarm, it takes you out. And you do not survive that. It's like marrying somebody who, they're a lot of fun, but they're not responsible. For a while, that's fun. But after a while, that gets really old. That gets really, really old after a while. And I think it's the same thing, like, if that's you. For righteousness, and I think it's important that he clarifies that, because you know what? You can spend your entire life hungering and thirsting after all sorts of things. First of all, man has the ability to be all in on something. You do have the ability to love God with all your heart, because just look at the people around you. They're loving things that are not God with all their heart. I mean, you probably have relatives and family members that it's not God they're all in on, but there's something they're all in on. You can tell they're all in on that. They're doing it all the time. I mean, there are people that you know that are all in on sports, and they're wearing out cars because they're all in on something like that. There are hobbies that people have, and you go over and just go like, "Wow, I mean, you're all in on this." And so you can be, the very fact that you can be all in on all sorts of lesser goals proves that what God is asking you to do with the most important thing in life is certainly not impossible. We see the examples of this in the Bible, Acts chapter 17 and verse 11, where it says, "Now all the Athenians and the strangers visiting there used to spend their time in nothing other than telling or hearing something new." They were all in on that. I mean, that was a passion they had. Paul spoke of the athlete in the games, in the Olympic games, that completely was dedicated to gaining this earthly crown. 1 Corinthians 9:25, Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things, not some things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath. They're all in on that. And I can throw myself wholly into the darkness, like in Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 3, where formerly the Ephesians, it says, you indulged in the desires of the flesh and of the mind. I think the word indulge said, you threw yourself into it. I mean, you were all into that former lifestyle. A good example of this in the book of Amos. Amos pictures people up north in the northern kingdom having this attitude. When will the new moon be over so that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath that we may open the wheat market to make the bushel smaller and the shekel bigger and to cheat with this on the scales? That is, boy, you know, I can't wait until Monday comes or Sunday comes when we can get out there and cheat people again. Why can't this Sabbath, this day of rest, why cannot just go by quicker so I can go back to my little stall and cheat somebody? I mean, that's when you are all in on something. Ahab is like that. Surely there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do evil in the sight of the Lord. He just, hey, here's all of me. Sold himself, I think, is the idea, like, here's all of me. Here, Satan, take all of me. I'm all yours. And so that's possible. Now, if it's possible to do that with evil, it's certainly possible to do that with good. And so I think sometimes we look at those passages like, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. We go like, well, nobody can do that. What do you mean no one can do that? People do that all the time with other things. There are people you know that love something other than God with all their heart and all their soul and all their strength. In the parable of the unjust steward in the book of Luke chapter 16, this is an interesting parable because Jesus points that out. He kind of shows us somebody out in the world. He says, boy, look at what this person does. Look at how dedicated and commitment they are to feathering their own nests or providing for themselves on an earthly basis. And then what he said in Luke chapter 16, verse 8, and his master praised the unrighteous manager because he had acted shrewdly, for the sons of this age are more shrewd in relation to their own kind than the sons of light. And I think the thought is that Jesus is saying, you know, there are times that people in the world are far more dedicated than to their earthly, temporary goals and sinful pleasures, then believers are dedicated to gaining eternal life. I mean, in a sense, we should be the people that are outworking everybody else in gaining our goal. Because there is no higher goal than the one that we have. I mean, we should have the reputation of, man, those Christians, they are all in. And they are absolutely dedicated to becoming more and more like Christ. We talked about this a little bit in the men's class. So, you know, sometimes people, they look at your schedule and they go, like, you go to church like 3 times a week? Yeah. But I think they misunderstand that because I think they think, like, of it being a ritual. Are you going to perform this ritual 3 times a week? It's not a ritual. I mean, what I'm doing is I'm trying to become like Christ. And you know, 3 times a week is not enough when you're trying to become. I mean, you need to understand is that the goal is to become like God. Morally, ethically. And it's to get all of the darkness out of my life. Now, what do you now think about 3 times a week? I think you need a lot more than that. Yeah, that's why I also pray and study and attend men's classes and Bible studies and whatever, because I'm trying to do the hardest thing there is to do. For a former sinner to become like Christ. Any questions about that? But that's the goal. Maybe you don't understand that's the goal, but that's the goal of the Christian life. But you know, this idea of hungering and thirsting, this is not the first time we've seen it in the Sermon on the Mount. Psalm 42 verse 1. As the deer pants for the water brook, so my soul pants for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for living God. When shall I come and appear before God? Now, I don't know if, a lot of times you read the passage and there's a good passage. And you don't read like, okay, but what's going on in the psalm? Because, you know, here's a person who says that he thirsts for God like a deer pants for fresh water, or cool water, in a, almost like in a drought. The subtitle says that we're dealing with one of the sons of Korah, which means that, and that's that little title before the, underneath Psalm 42. We're dealing with a Levite. We're dealing with someone that had a job to do, like in the temple. And so that's what's going on here. Now, also, he's surrounded by people that are saying, in verse 3, they say to me all day long, where is your God? And so he's surrounded by people that are not believers. And then it says in verse 4, I used to go along with the throng and lead them in procession to the house of God. I used to do that, but he's not doing that anymore. So it looks like he's not able to do his job anymore. It looks like he's not around the temple anymore. And then it says in verse 6, therefore I remember you from the land of the Jordan and the peaks of Hermon. And the thought here is of the psalm is that it looks like we have a Levite who's away from Jerusalem, where the temple is at. And possibly he's heading north, and possibly he's being taken into captivity, because that's the way they would take you if you go to Babylon, etc., or Assyria, is they would take you out north, and then you would cut over and head east. And Mount Hermon is probably the last geographical point that you could actually see the Judean highlands, and like that area down there where Jerusalem is at. And it looks like further and further and further he's being taken away from the center of worship. And hopefully that never happens to us. I don't ever want to end up in a situation where I can't attend anymore because of my health. In fact, I think I'd rather say, take me there and let me die. Just take me there and let me die there. I'd rather die there among God's people than in my living room. Just take me there and let me die. But imagine being cut off where you could not worship any longer publicly with God's people. That looks like what this guy's going through. Now, would we really hunger and thirst in that situation, or would we just sit there and find a lot of other things to do? I mean, hunger and thirst, like, it. Have you ever had an extended period of time when you could not be with God's people? And this guy is going through that. Longing for the former days of public worship. In the book of Matthew chapter 13, Jesus gave a parable about the merchant with the pearls. I thought there was something interesting he said about that there in Matthew chapter 13, verse 45. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking fine pearls. And upon finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. Now, all that he had, I think, certainly would include like his inventory of lesser pearls. But all that he had also might be his inventory of lesser pearls and all that he had. You know, like his car, like his watch, like that antique dining room table he's got, sell that, I got to have that pearl. I mean, all that he had looks like he liquidated everything he had in order to. And when he liquidated, he had just enough to get the pearl. But he's not going to be able to get that pearl unless he like liquidates everything he has. I don't know, if you're here this morning and you're not a Christian and you're looking at, I don't know, what really is thinking me about, what really is stopping me from becoming a Christian is, I would have to give up this and this. Okay, but what you need to realize is that those two things are standing in the way of a lot better future. You need to get rid of that and that. You're never going to move ahead. You're never going to move ahead unless you get rid of that and that. Sacrifice it. Be willing to sacrifice it. I mean, have you ever been around Have you ever been around, have you ever helped someone move and they're moving stuff like, they're moving across the country and they're putting 2x4s and they're moving like, they sell 2x4s over, or like, here's a rusty old can of nails or whatever, and it's like, I mean, you get, sometimes you're with somebody, like, you know, you need to get rid of that. And how many times are you going to move? Is there something in your house that you keep moving around and someone needs to tell you, will you just get rid of that? You've already moved it like 10 times and you're never going to use it. But there's certain things in your life that are far more deadly than things like that. It's like, that's going to hold you back the rest of your life. You're never going to get ahead and you're never going to grow. And you're never going to become the person you need to be unless you liquidate that. And so that's following God with it. And you know, it's interesting that I don't find Jesus saying, here's a merchant of pearls, and there's this really great pearl out there, and he sells everything, but he's sad that he had to sell everything. No, it looks like he is glad. He is. That's what he's been looking for all his life. And so what's the truth worth? And what's eternal life worth? I think it's worth everything you got. And what is a clear conscience worth? And what is becoming the best person that you can become? What is that worth? And what is it worth to be able to die at peace knowing I'm entering my house justified? What's that worth? So, we already talked about this verse. Paul gave up all for Christ. We see that. So this idea of hungering, thirsting after righteousness is not a new concept. So what really drives us? What drives you? What drives me? What is your passion? What are you passionate about? What would an observer say? Someone that knows you, a friend or neighbor, what would someone say? Well, what's Mark passionate about? What's his life all about? What's his life centered on? What's his thing? And what'd they say? God. Notice, someone has noted that hungering and thirsting are in the present tense here in the passage. Is that, like Abraham, you had to keep walking with God. You have to keep hungering and thirsting after righteousness. And one writer said, Jesus' challenges here is that, do you really desire goodness and purity? Are you intensely, sharply pained by your need for true righteousness? That you would die unless you get it. Just how badly do you want to be righteous? I guess that's the same thing I would say about any young man that is thinking about going into preaching. Don't do it unless you would die if you don't do it. That it has to be that bad of a hunger and desire is that if I can't do this in life, I'm just going to die. That's the passion behind her. That's how bad you must do this. So I think hungry and thirsting is the idea that just being a good moral person is not enough. That's not enough. And being religious is not enough. And just believing in God is not enough, because even the demons believe. And nothing is going to get in my way when it comes to being right with God and understanding what the Bible says. And nothing's going to stop me from fully obeying Him. And I'm not interested at all in how close to sin I can get without sinning. And I'm not interested in how much error can I believe and still be okay. Because in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5 and in verse 20, I say to you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. You're not going to make it. And I guess for us it would be like we're surrounded by a lot of religious people out there, and Jesus says, that's not the standard. That is not the standard. You gotta excel. You gotta pass that up. And the standard that Jesus gave goes far beyond just outward conformity, but it includes inward purity and purity in our relationships. And it includes meeting God's expectations for being the husband, wife, parent, citizen, friend that you need to be. I think hungering and thirsting after righteousness equally includes, and I'm just not looking for any church, just any old church. I'm looking for the church that I can find revealed in the Bible, that Jesus says, I will build my church. I'm looking for the church that is in subjection to Christ. I'm looking for the church that Jesus is its head. I'm looking for the church that's the pillar and ground of the truth. That's what I'm looking for. I think it also includes putting the things of God ahead of all other things and relationships. Shall be filled. You know, I mean, that's a wonderful promise, because Jeremiah and Jesus both talked about this idea that life apart from God is a withered. You're like a bush. You're like a scrawny bush in the desert. You're some scrawny shrub that is like half dead. Maybe your neighbors have something like that. When are they going to cut that tree down? Or when are they going to pull that bush out? It's half dead. And it's there's a warning here of, don't try to fill your life with anything other than God and His righteousness, because you're going to end up disappointed and empty in the end. You live long enough and you try this and you try that. And for those of you that spent any time not being a Christian, I mean, you tried this, you tried that, and it was kind of fun for all. It seemed to work for a while, but then it's like, man, that doesn't make me happy anymore. And that doesn't really satisfy me. And that kind of leaves me empty. And you start kind of wondering, is life playing some cruel joke upon you of, hey, do this and this will make you happy. And hey, do that and that will make you happy. And you go and do it and then you're not filled. And don't create a situation where your 50-year-old self is going to be really mad at your 20-year-old self. Like, why didn't you do that? Why didn't you prepare? Why didn't you take yourself more seriously? Why didn't you plan for your future? You don't want to create a situation like that. And so I think the idea is here, if you take this path thing, and I'm not going to listen to you, Mark. I'm going to listen to what the Bible says. I'm going to try to fill my life with material things. I'm going to go out trying to make the most money I can and buy stuff for me and have stuff. You're going to end up surrounded by stuff that doesn't make you happy. Or you're just going to keep buying stuff frantically. Earthly pleasures. Well, I'm just going to throw myself into the pleasures of this earth. And it could be things like that. I'm going to do all sorts of recreational things. I'm going to do all sorts of traveling and stuff like that. But that's going to be my focus and not God. Or I'm going to throw myself into this. I'm going to numb myself. And I'm going to go in there and I'm going to throw myself into drugs or alcohol or whatever it may be. And I think people have found that they're all prisons. All of those are prisons. You're like, you're trapped. You bought into it. You threw yourself into it. It said, this will make you happy. And it's like, it's empty. I'm empty. And you feel like a fool. Not only that, but you feel like something's wrong with you. Like, hey, I did this. What's wrong with me? And not only that, but I think you get really, really mad. And depressed and cynical and despairing. I went into this. I thought it would fill me up. This is my answer for my pain. And I tried to numb my pain with this. And now I feel worse about myself. And I'm addicted to it now. I'm stuck. Just another dead end. And I think the thought is that Jesus is saying the only thing that can really fill you up. Now, a lot of people have tried to fill themselves with other things. So I guess take a good look at them. Like, you know people like that. They're trying to desperately fill themselves with something other than God. And I guess ask yourself, is it working? Is it working in their life? And then look at the person that's really trying to pursue righteousness and say, like, how are they doing? Does it look like that they're being filled? Does it look like they have something that maintains them even during the dark times? Be glad. Be glad that no earthly pleasure or thing or relationship can fill you up. That's not something to be depressed about. That's something to be glad about. I mean, what that says about you is this. There's something very important and deep about you that even an earthly relationship cannot fill up. There's a depth to you. There's an importance to you that earthly things cannot satisfy your yearning for meaning or satisfaction or purpose. I mean, do you really want to be someone that's so shallow? I mean, do you really want to be that girl that looks at some guy and says, wow, he's got a nice car. I mean, do you want to be that person? That's about how deep you are. Like, hey man, as long as I have my car, that's all I need. You really? I mean, what this says is there's something about you of such depth. Now, no earthly thing can fill you up. That's how big you are. That the only thing that can really fill you is God. Be glad about that. No, I'm saying like, man, I bought this car and I thought it was making me happy and now it's kind of typical and I'm bummed about that. Well, that's because you're made in God's image. And you were designed to be filled with something far more significant than some piece of metal. That says something that you're really important. And do that and you won't be disappointed. That's Jesus' promise. Jesus says, you chase God with all your heart and being and you will not be disappointed and you will not be let down. But if you chase anything else, there's disappointment at the end of that journey. All right, so now you know. Now you know. I mean, you're gonna pursue something, right? And why not let it be the ultimate? Why not let it be the ultimate ideal? That's what God is, the ultimate ideal. He's real. He's more than an ideal, but He is the ultimate ideal. Then why don't you pursue? That would be the right thing to pursue with all your being. Don't give your life to all these lesser goals and things. You were designed for greater things than that. The Bible says, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. Let's be singing that invitation song.